olmadığını kendim başlayan cihazına sınıfayan taksizinde tanrılığını tesmari sevgilerim al. Sri Chaitanya Vistam Stapitam Devotale Sayam Rupa Paramayam Vedatin Sarsan Vantika Nam Sukhata Tudyasta Sita Sandhu Vayivata Patitanam Pabhanyado Vashanyado Namahama. Yesterday we completed speaking about the prayers of the demigods who offered their prayers to Krishna within the womb. And they concluded, they began by asking, saying that Krishna was Satyavratam. He always kept his vow, and he had his vows that he has come, because he promised the demigods who was speaking through Lord Brahma and Bhumi. He had promised them that he would come, yada yada hidanasya, and he kept his vow, and now Krishna was in the womb of Mother Devaki. And the demigods concluded their prayers by saying, you have nothing to worry about now, Devaki, because Krishna is in your womb. He has come to protect you. Kamsa cannot hurt you. Because naturally, she was terrified of Kamsa. And some of the acharyas actually say that she gave birth in the 8th month just to throw Kamsa off. So he would, because he was waiting for the child naturally in the 9th month. Come in the ninth month, so Krishna came prematurely, so he wasn't quite prepared. But Devaki was afraid because Kamsa had killed 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 children before who were very effulgent and so wonderful. And later on, in the later on, Devaki is going to ask for those children back from Krishna. But in any case, Krishna is about to take his birth. And we're going to hear that. When is Janmashtami exactly? Anyone know the date?
September 2nd.
So we're preparing.
Thursday, September 2nd.
Wow, very auspicious day. So they assure that the Mother Devaki, the demigods, that you need not fear Kamsa. And the Prabhupada translated it in an interesting way. Mumur so, who has decided to be killed by the Lord, because by opposing Krishna, Kamsa is deciding to be killed by Krishna, naturally. So he will protect you, your eternal son Krishna will protect you. So he's eternal, and also he's the eternal son of Devaki. Their relationship is eternal, and he will also protect the entire Yadu dynasty. So then the demigods offered their prayers to the Lord in the womb, and then they, with keeping Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva in front of them, returned to their homes in the heavenly planets. Now, Krishna, this is the third chapter, is entitled The Birth of Krishna. All the auspicious times for the appearance of the Lord. At the auspicious time for the appearance of the Lord, the entire universe was surcharged with all the qualities of goodness, all beauty, and all peace. The constellation Rohini appeared. It actually says, let's see. is Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. He says that you're not actually supposed to mention the birth star, the nakshatra. So it doesn't directly mention it. It says Ajana Janma Ritsam, the constellation of stars. Janma Nakshatra. So the constellation Rohini, so Rohini is a very auspicious nakshatra, as did stars like Aswini. The sun, the moon, and other stars and planets are very peaceful. So what Sukadeva is describing here is the auspicious occasion. Actually, Vishwanath, in his commentary, he mentions the placement of the planets. Would you like to give your tika on it, if we say what they are? Do you know them?
I've seen the chart, but it's a bit speculative because I don't know what the authority for it is.
Well, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur.
Oh,
I think so. I think
it was. It was in
well, yeah, he says what it's if I remember correctly. So everything's auspicious. It's so interesting. Everything is auspicious. And someone like Kamsa's going to get so upset, he's going to try and kill it. He's going to kill the cause of all auspiciousness. And of course, he's going to be killed. He's decided to be killed by Krishna in that sense. But you can see that, like, different personalities have different tastes that they relish. Prabhupada tells that story of, and it's quite important to show that we don't exactly taste with our tongue, we don't exactly smell fragrances with our nose, but rather this is all just simply going on in the mind. In other words, there's no absolute objective good taste and good fragrance. And Prabhupada told the story of how in Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur sent some of his disciples to Burma. So they were having a deity installation, and they had a kitchen outside, and they were cooking puris and different items and ghee. And the neighbors were complaining, "Oh, what is this terrible smell?" And they have another preparation that they like, called, the Prabhupada said, it was called nafi. And this nafi is when they take, he described it in a little bit of a different way, even more grotesque, but they take a pot, a clay pot, and they jam into it as many fishes, dead fish as they can. And then they leave it for months and months and months and months until it rots. And if you lift up the lid, the whole neighborhood smells so terrible. And they keep it outside their door. And then after a few years, it's like some kind of a jelly jam, and then they put it on their rice, and this is the mark of culture. And actually, one soldier swam. Oh, you're leaving on this one. I thought this would cause you to go. This isn't the kind of thing you talk about during prasadam either. And I heard Sahotra Maharaj talking about this too, and he said, all over the part of Asia, Cambodia, Vietnam, it's very common, it has different names, and they put it on their rice, and they think it's the most delectable thing, and it is the mark of the culture of a place. Is they like this. And they thought the ghee, puris, cooked in ghee, was a terrible smell. So Kamsa, that which was the most auspicious, which was the whole situation upon the birth of Krishna, and the birth of Krishna itself was auspicious for the entirety of the universe. Krishna was going to appear, the all effulgent, all wonderful Supreme Personality of Godhead. He was going to appear, and very mysteriously, because the universe has come from him in his form of Mahavishnu, Karana Daksha Vishnu, and he was going to appear in the universes, in one of the universes. So completely mysterious is the all the activities of the Supreme Lord, Sambhavam Yatma Maya. He's appearing by his own mercy, by his own internal energy, by his own desire. So the whole universe lines itself up towards auspiciousness. Let's see if we can... But the whole atmosphere Jupiter was in Pisces. What do you think about that? Exalted or strong?
Strong.
Mercury and Saturn were exalted, and Taurus, he was Taurus ascendant. Did you know that? The Moon and Mars and Mercury and Saturn were exalted. Taurus was in ascendant. Jupiter was in Pisces. Sun was in Leo. That's
Sun.
Venus in Libra. Rahu in Scorpio. Exalted. At midnight on Wednesday, with the Moon and the Rohini Nakshatra. Lord Krishna appeared. Quite a chart, huh? Boy, with a chart like that, you could be God. You really do well in this world. You do anything you want. And actually, later on in the 8th chapter, Gauga Rishi is going to see Krishna, and he's going to calculate his future, and he's going to be amazed. He's going to immediately understand that this boy has come many, many times before, and he has different names whenever he comes, and that he's going to be a Nayana Sarva Dorgani. He's going to be the shelter of anyone who takes shelter of him. He will give them shelter. That's such a wonderful and reassuring thought, that if we just take shelter of Krishna, we will gain shelter. We'll actually be sheltered. Because in this world there are so many promises of shelter and so many promises of happiness, but they are durasraya. They cannot actually give shelter, because who can give shelter? Obviously only someone who is powerful enough and merciful enough. Because if someone is powerful and not merciful, all powerful and not merciful, then that's the most dangerous person. And if someone is all merciful but not all powerful, then they may have all good intentions, but how much can it practically help us? But Krishna is all powerful and all merciful. So the whole universe lined itself up perfectly due to this auspicious birth. So the constellation Rohini appeared, as did stars like Aswini. The sun, moon, and other stars and planets were very peaceful. All directions appeared extremely pleasing, and the beautiful stars twinkled in the cloudless sky. So what Sukadev is describing here is how because there are different elements in creation. There are eight different elements, and each of the different elements were in an auspicious mood and showing their best in auspiciousness. So the sun and moon and other stars in the ether were very peaceful. All the directions appeared pleasing. Beautiful stars twinkled in the cloudless sky. The earth, meaning here, just is decorated with towns, villages, mines, and pasturing grounds, seemed all auspicious. Sometimes we perceive this, that everything is, feels very auspicious in the world, and sometimes we can even perceive that everything is inauspicious and dangerous. So the water, the rivers flowed with clear water, and the lakes and vast reservoirs full of lilies and lotuses were extraordinarily beautiful. When things were auspicious, things were beautiful. And the trees and green plants full of flowers and leaves, pleasing to the eyes, birds like cuckoos and swarms of bees began chanting with sweet voices for the sake of the demigods. A pure breeze, air, began to blow, pleasing the sense of touch and bearing the aroma of flowers. And when the brahmanas engaged in ritualistic ceremonies ignited their fires according to Vedic principles, the fires burned steadily, undisturbed by the breeze. So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says that the fires in Treta Yuga, they burned towards the right. So all the fires, even though it was Dwapara Yuga, the later age and less auspicious age than the previous age, the fire even took on the characteristic of the sacrificial fires in Treta Yuga, and they were burning to the right, and they weren't sputtering, they were burning steadily, and they were undisturbed by the breeze, they weren't flickering. Thus, when the birthless Lord Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, was about to appear, the saints and Brahmins, who had always been disturbed by demons like Kamsa and his men, felt peace within the core of their hearts. And kettle drums simultaneously vibrated from the upper planetary systems. So the birthless, he who is unborn, will now take his birth. Of course, if one understands this simply, Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita, that if one actually and simply understands the birth of Krishna and the extraordinary nature of it, that the unborn is taking birth, how mysterious and yet how wonderful it is, because he is taking his birth for completely different reasons than we, each of us, have taken our birth. We didn't consciously choose a place to take birth. We didn't consciously choose when we would take birth. We didn't choose our parents, our family, or the particular body that we were going to wear as we wear and wear out also. We didn't choose these things, but more practically speaking, we're forcibly placed within a situation, and we grow up forgetting that we're simply forced. We, at some point in our life, sort of we become conscious that sort of I exist, and who am I? I'm me. This is who I am. And that identification, that abhiman, or self-conception, is placed around the material circumstances that we're born in, that are out of our control, that we didn't choose, especially the body that we have. And that becomes, for all practical purpose, our conception of who we are. So our concept of who we are, our identity, is forced on us. That is what birth means for us. It means the beginning of a new term of existence in the material world. So when Krishna takes his birth, we must understand that it is completely different. Because we could also say that, well, we're, with a little philosophy, we could say that we're birthless, we're eternal, so we're also the birthless taking birth. But Krishna's birth is not forced at all, because he is completely independent, while we are forced and dependent. He's completely independent, and yet he takes his birth. So what is causing him to take birth? He's taking birth by his own desire only. And what is he, where is he choosing to take birth? In the womb of Devaki. Yes, even within a womb. He's choosing to do this. He's chosen his parents due to their great devotion for him. So all this is his choice, because he is all powerful. And the whole universe, including the sages and the brahmanas, the lilies, the flowers, the breezes, all space, the constellations and the planets, they're so thrilled that Krishna, the all-powerful Supreme Lord, is taking birth within the universe. They line themselves up to greet him. The last paragraph of Prabhupada's purport just talks about this a little bit, and he says, on the occasion of Lord Krishna's birth, seasonal changes took place throughout the entire universe. Krishna was born during the month of September, yet it appeared just like springtime. The atmosphere, so the seasons changed to greet Krishna. The atmosphere, however, was very cool, although not chilly. And the rivers and reservoirs appeared just as they would in the Sharad season, the fall. So everything was just so beautiful. Lotuses and lilies blossomed during the day. But although Krishna appeared at 12 o'clock midnight, the lilies and lotuses were in bloom. And thus the wind blowing at that time was full of fragrance. So this is, in one sense, this tells us the key to making everything auspicious. And what is that key? That everything cooperated, all the ingredients in material existence cooperated for the pleasure of Krishna. In other words, they gave their best in such a way that Krishna would be pleased. And again, this is the key, or a key, in making everything auspicious, is giving our best in such a way that Krishna will be pleased, despite whatever else may be going on. Because we know that Krishna consciousness is ahetuki. That means it is causeless. What does it mean when we translate ahetuki as causeless? It means that nothing can cause it and nothing can stop it. It depends on the free will of the living entity. So there's nothing that can stop our Krishna consciousness. So there's so many things that can be stopped. We might not be able to do this. We might not be able to execute Krishna consciousness just the way we like, or this or that. But what can stop is the offering with devotion for Krishna's pleasure in the best we can. So the lotuses and lilies blossom during the day. But although Krishna appeared at 12 o'clock midnight, the lilies and lotuses were in bloom, and thus the wind blowing at that time was full of fragrance. So, because of Kamsa's disturbance, the Vedic ritual ceremonies had been almost stopped. The Brahmins and saintly persons could not execute the Vedic rituals with peaceful minds, because Kamsa was so horrible, he was stopping everything, just like Haranyakasipu would not let any sacrifices be performed, because he wanted everyone simply to worship him. So the Brahmins couldn't do their prescribed duties, so they were very upset and disturbed. But now the Brahmanas, somehow or another, due to the change in the atmosphere, they were very pleased to perform their daily ritualistic ceremonies undisturbed. And Prabhupada concludes by saying, the business of the Asuras is to disturb the Suras, the devotees and Brahmins. But But at the time of Krishna's appearance, these devotees and Brahmins were undisturbed. More about the auspiciousness. The Kanaras and Gandharvas began to sing auspicious songs. The Siddhas and Charanas offered auspicious prayers, and the Vidyadharis, along with the Apsaras, began to dance in jubilation. So there are certain things that make the atmosphere very auspicious, which these things are in the mode of goodness. There's certain decorations, there's cleanliness gives the atmosphere a completely different feel to it. And colorful, clean decorations, fragrant incense. That was one of the things that struck me about the complaints against the temple, that somebody complained that the smell of incense burning, but the smell of flesh burning, they think is very wonderful. They'd probably love this nafi also. You could probably go door to door with selling nafi there and do quite well. Huh? Oh, we're going to send her out the door again. Sorry. It's enough. No. Incense only. Hare Krishna. The demigods and great saintly persons showered flowers in a joyous mood. And things like having these rice paintings, what do they call them in Rangoli and Vrindavan, and then you have the banana plants and the pots of water and with the rice around them and the coconuts on top. These aren't just ritualistic things. They give an auspicious atmosphere, and the chanting of Vedic hymns and things like that. And the atmosphere is very, very fine, and it's very at least sattvic. And then on the other hand, there's heavy metal music played really, really loudly. So that, where was it playing? That was a few kilometers away. Yeah, and it was so loud. That's
Vrindavan.
Huh?
Vrindavan.
No, not in Vrindavan, in
Basindine.
No, this was in West Swan, right? Mm-hmm. They were having, of course, at the wineries, they're having a big festival. So different tastes according to the modes of material nature that control one. Many of us were born with one taste, and we're trying to shift it to a completely different taste like that. So sometimes it's a bit of a struggle. And you can see that even in Vrindavan, and even with the Indian devotees, when they go to the restaurant, the MBT restaurant, the most favorite choice food is pizza. Somehow or another, it's a universal food or something like that. But people like pizza. But different tastes. It's the age. So the clouds gathered in the sky and very mildly thundered, making sounds like that of the ocean waves. So that was auspicious too. But it's interesting that it described how this previously described how the sky was cloudless and the stars were twinkling. But here it says there was the clouds gathered in the sky. So right before Krishna's birth, the clouds gathered, even though the sky was cloudless before that. And they made sounds like the ocean waves. Then the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, who was situated in the core of everyone's heart, appeared from the heart of Devaki in the dense darkness of night, like the full moon rising on the eastern horizon. Because Devaki was the same category as Sri Krishna, the same category as Sri Krishna. Prabhupada says in the purport, at the seashore was the sound of mild waves, and above the sea were clouds in the sky, which began to thunder very pleasingly. And when things were adjusted, this is from Prabhupada's purport, when things were adjusted like this, Lord Vishnu, who was residing within the hearts of all living entities, appeared in the darkness of night as the Supreme Personality of Godhead before Devaki, who appeared as one of the demigoddesses. The appearance of Lord Vishnu at that time could be compared to the rising of the full moon in the sky on the eastern horizon. The objection may be raised that since Lord Krishna appeared on the eighth day of the waning moon, there could be no rising of the full moon. In answer to this, it may be said that Lord Krishna appeared in the dynasty in which is in the hierarchy of the moon, and therefore, although the moon was incomplete on that night because of the Lord's appearance in the dynasty wherein the moon itself is the original person, the moon was an overjoyous condition, so by the grace of Krishna it could appear as a full moon. Then Vasudeva, so Krishna took his birth. And also the Lord who's at everyone's heart, when he takes his birth, he doesn't, to take his birth, he doesn't have to leave anyone's heart to be born, because he's extraordinarily and fully unlimitedly powerful. So then Vasudev saw the newborn child, who had had wonderful lotus-like eyes. Did they teach you this one in midwifery school? And who was born, who bore in his four hands the four weapons: Sham, Chakra, Gada, and Padma. And on his chest was the mark of Srivats, and on his neck the brilliant Kastuba gem, and dressed in yellow, his body blackest like a dense cloud, his scattered hair fully grown, and his helmet and earrings sparkling uncommonly with the valuable gem Vaidurya, the child decorated with a brilliant belt, armlets, bangles, and other ornaments, appeared very wonderful. When Vasudev saw his extraordinary son, his eyes were struck with wonder. The fear, because Kamsa had killed all the children other than Balaram, who had been the child previous, the seventh child. But Kamsa had killed all the children born previously. But when he saw this child, he understood that this is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because this is not ordinary at all, and therefore he had no fear. So his eyes were struck with wonder. In transcendental jubilation, he mentally collected 10,000 cows and distributed them amongst the Brahmins as a transcendental festival. So his eyes were struck with wonder. So Prabhupada quotes Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in explaining in a wonderful way what it means that his eyes were full of wonder, and why he saw Krishna, and what wonderment did he see. So he gives many reasons. The first wonder was that the Lord was not afraid to appear within the prison house of Kamsa, where Vasudeva and Devaki were interned. So that's the first wonder, that he had no fear. The second wonder, although the Lord, the Supreme Transcendence, is all-pervading, because when Krishna appears, look what he did. Just so how much that melted the heart of Devaki and Vasudev, because they were in prison in such an unfortunate position, but yet Krishna came to them despite their unfortunate position. He took birth as their child despite their unfortunate circumstances. So this touched him with the kindness of Krishna and melted his heart and brought out so much affection and love and gratitude, and he was wonderstruck by that. Second wonder, although the Lord, the Supreme Transcendence, is all-pervading, he had appeared from the womb of Devaki. So he's everywhere and everything, and yet he appeared from the womb of Devaki. So that was wonderful. Wonderful, not in the sense that we use wonderful, oh, that's wonderful, but in the sense that it fills one's consciousness with wonder. How is this, how wonderful this is. Awesome. The third point of wonder was that a child could take birth from the womb so nicely decorated. Fourth, the Supreme Personality of Godhead was Vasudeva's worshipable deity, yet he had taken his birth as his son. Because usually one is praying to the Supreme Lord, and the child is dependent, and yet the independent, all-powerful Lord had taken his birth in a dependent situation. For all these reasons, Vasudeva was transcendentally jubilant, and he wanted to perform a festival, as Kshatriyas do, to celebrate the birth of the child. But because of his imprisonment, he was unable to do it externally, and therefore he performed the festival within his mind. This was just as good. If one cannot externally serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one can serve the Lord within one's mind. This is always an interesting point, since the activities of the mind are as good as those of the other senses. This is the non-dual or absolute situation. People generally perform ritualistic ceremonies for the birth of a child. Why then should Vasudev not have performed such a ceremony when the Supreme Lord appeared at his son? So there's no circumstance within which we cannot serve, even if we are completely physically incapacitated. We can still serve within the mind, and we can make Krishna such wonderful offerings within the mind. We can, like that Brahmana who is described in the Nectar of Devotion, Bhakti Sanatana Sindhu, that he heard this point, and he was very, very poor, but he heard that you can serve the Lord within the mind, so he decided in his mind he would serve with great riches. So because he was worshipping his deity even though he was poverty stricken, so he used to in his mind make jeweled pots and golden vessels and go to all these holy rivers and gather water for his puja, for his service, for his deity worship, and he would make opulent foods, and he would make an opulent throne for his deity, and golden plates and jewel bedecked articles for the worship. And he was doing this, and he was cooking wonderfully with costly ingredients, the most costly saffrons from faraway places, and he did this for years and years. And then one day, as we know, he was making some as they call parama anna, which is sweet rice. And he as he was cooking it, in his mind he wanted to test it, because this parama anna sweet rice is not best when served cold, not best when served hot. It should be cool, at least room temperature. So who knows what he was going to do when it was too hot, but maybe he would bring it in his mind to the Himalayan mountains or something like that to cool it down and place some of the ice around it or something. You can do all these things. So anyway, as he was cooking, he was actually went through everything and cooked it. And he was waited for time, and then to see if it was hot, he put his finger on, probably on the pot, actually. But he, somehow he touched the sweet place, and it was very hot still. And he looked and saw his actual finger, not his mental finger, was burned. And he woke up from his meditation, and he was shocked. And at that same time, Lakshmi Devi saw Lord Narayan laughing in Vaikuntha. And she asked him, "Why are you laughing?" And he had just played this trick on the Brahmin. So he was laughing. So she asked him why, and he told her the story, and then he brought the Brahmin to the spiritual world. He was so pleased by his mental offerings. So Vasudeva was in a situation where he couldn't offer in any other way a festival other than mentally, and he did it. He did what he could. So Prabhupada makes the example that when we can, and actually Jiva Goswami in Bhakti Sandarbha, when he's describing deity worship, he describes it can be done mentally. And he says it's better that it, in one sense, it's better if deity worship is done mentally because it's easier to keep things clean. And the paraphernalia doesn't have, it's easier to keep it purified. And also, even if you use silver paraphernalia, that's not considered pure. And actually, the best, and even gold paraphernalia, is even 24-karat gold is too soft, and also it's 99.9% pure. So actually, the purest paraphernalia is actually said to be copper, because that you can make pure. Confirmed by a double sneeze. But then you have to clean it very, very carefully and keep it shiny. And copper. So, but then Jiva Goswami says, but then the problem is, if people only do, especially householders, if they not mendicants, they just do mental puja, then they'll just use their money for their own pleasure. So they should do regular puja with deities and use it, because that's the proper use of money for the pleasure of Krishna. So Vasudev could understand this child was the Supreme Personality of Godhead Narayan. Having concluded this without a doubt, he became fearless, and bowing down with folded hands and concentrating his attention, he began to offer prayers to the child who illuminated his birthplace by his natural influence. So Prabhupada explains in the purport, he was surely fearless since he understood that the Lord had appeared to give him protection. Gata bi prabhavavit. Understanding that the Supreme Personality of Godhead was present here, properly offered prayers as follows. And how many prayers are 13? 2? Quite a lot. So 22. And then Devaki will offer simple prayers. It's funny that Devaki's prayers, we'll talk about tomorrow. Not tomorrow, but on Monday. There's something funny in it that Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says. It's not fair to do that, is that? To say that it's something really funny and clever, but I'll tell you next time. So I'll tell you now. Is that? Huh? Huh? find the exact comment. We'll read Devaki's verse. This is how she begins. So Vasudeva offered his prayers. And then, now, let's go back to the end of Vasudeva's prayers. He says, Oh my Lord, Lord of the demigods, after hearing the prophecy that you would take birth in our home and kill him, because Krishna is there with the baby wearing a helmet with four hands, being fully dressed, hair, jewels. And so at the end of Vasudeva's prayers, he says, Oh my Lord, this is the final prayer. Lord of the demigods, after hearing the prophecy that you would take birth in our home and kill him, this uncivilized Kamsa killed so many of your elder brothers. As soon as he hears from his lieutenants that you have appeared, he'll immediately come with weapons to kill you. So Vishwanath says, in Vasudeva's words, Although I know all your glories, I cannot cross the ocean of uncertainty, because he wants him to withdraw this form, because he knows that if Kamsa sees this form, he's going to say, Oh, here's the child who's obviously come to kill me. I'm the enemy of Vishnu. Anyway. So now I say, I'm uncertain about this, so he wants him to withdraw his form. Now I will inform you about evil Kamsa, anticipating that his son will say, No, father, he will not kill me because he will be overcome with the sweetness of my form. Vasudeva's answer is this prayer, but Kamsa is uncivilized, and he has no taste for rasa. His servants will inform him of your birth, and he will come here. I can see him coming now, so hide your form. I'm afraid of what will happen when he comes desiring to kill you. So after seeing that her child, then Devaki's turn comes, had all the symptoms. Devaki understands that her child had all the symptoms of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Devaki, he was very much afraid of Kamsa and unusually astonished because child was right there. She began to offer prayers to the Lord. So Devaki, this is Vishwanath's comment, seeing her husband's fear and seeing that her newly born child did not withdraw his form but was smiling instead, Devaki became completely wonderstruck. And she thought, What shall I do? This child, identifying himself as God, has no fear of Kamsa. Of course, in front of the Supreme Lord, Kamsa is nothing. So why should we be afraid? What nonsense we are. But still, she said, My dear Lord, there are different Vedas, some of which describe you as imperceivable through words and the mind. Yet, you are the origin of the entire cosmic manifestation. You are Brahman, the greatest of everything, full of effulgence like the sun. You have no material cause. You are free from change and deviation. You have no material desires. Thus the Vedas say that you are the substance. Therefore, my Lord, you are directly the origin of all Vedic statements. And by understanding you, one gradually understands everything. You are different from the light of Brahman and Paramatma. Yet you are none different from them. Everything emanates from you. Indeed, you are the cause of all causes, Lord Vishnu, the light of all transcendental knowledge. So what Devaki wants to tell him is, please remove this form. But this is what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur said, which was something like what Panki Prabhu said yesterday, and I thought it was funny. This is Vishwanath's comment. As it is well known that the devotees control the Lord by praising him, Devaki is thinking, I will make this child submissive by my prayers, and then I'll tell him what I want. Anyway, I thought it was funny. And then she's going to tell him. But what she wants is only for his welfare, of course. And what she wants is, because of your appearance, I'm becoming more and more anxious in fear of Kamsa. So she's acting in a cultured way. She's afraid that the child is going to be killed. But if she says, I'm afraid you'll be killed, he'll say, no, I'm the Supreme Lord. How will I be killed? Don't fear. So instead she says, I'm afraid. She puts the emphasis on me, that I'm afraid. So the worry isn't you, but please remove my fear. I'm becoming more and more anxious in fear of Kamsa. Therefore, please arrange for that sinful Kamsa to be unable to understand that you have taken birth from my womb. You have spoken of my powers in the previous verses, but was all that empty words? Krishna says, Devaki answers, truly, O son, as your mother, I'm unsteady of mind. Do not be sad. This is my fault, and I take full responsibility for it. But out of affection for your mother, please withdraw your form. And then her final, she says, oh, my Lord, you are the all-pervading Supreme Personality of Godhead, and your transcendental forearm form holding kansa, disc, club, and lotus is unnatural for this world. Please withdraw this form and become just like a natural human child so that I may try to hide you somewhere. At the time of devastation, the entire cosmos containing all created moving and non-moving entities enters your transcendental body and is held there without difficulty. But now this transcendental form has taken birth from my womb. The form that holds the entirety of the universes. People will not be able to believe this. And I shall become an object of ridicule. So she said, I thought it's funny. Monkey, you also think it's funny, yeah?
This is Vishwanath Chakravarti. He is sort of, by giving his own realization of this. Actually, what she said or what she didn't say, I don't know the exact language you've written there or not.
But she has praised him so completely. And then she's as the Supreme Lord, and then she's telling him to now hide your form. Otherwise you'll be killed by Kamsa, because that's what Vasudev said too. So the two are contradictory. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, who is full of rasa and sweetness, is explaining this contradiction in a way that increases the sweetness of the exchange. Because it's coming from her heart as a mother, not from her knowledge of him as the Supreme Lord. It is wonderful. O origin of all, although I am your devotee and I have been accepted by you as your mother, I am still afflicted by fear of Kamsa. Please make this form invisible to those who see with material eyes. Devaki prays, you are fearless and your devotees are fearless. Then why, O Lord, do you keep your mother and father in fear?
Mm-hmm. Earlier was said that Vasudev became fearless when he realized that his child was Krishna. So why he takes him into the element?
Well, of course we look at it on different levels, but it's a confusing situation for them, because they have two things going on at the same time. One thing is they see he's opulent and all-powerful, and at the same time they see him as their son. So sometimes one mood comes and sometimes another mood comes. The same thing happened when after Krishna killed Kamsa, he approached Vasudeva and Devaki to free them. And first thing he did was touch their feet. And they didn't know what to do. They, in a similar way, they became confused. They became stunned. Because on one hand, it was improper for them, because they knew he was the Supreme Personality of Godhead, it was completely improper for them to touch, for Krishna Balaram to touch their feet. And on the other hand, they were their sons. They wanted to just embrace him. They wanted to touch their feet. So they couldn't touch, Vasudeva and Devaki couldn't touch Krishna's feet, because that would be inappropriate, because he's their son. And they couldn't embrace him as they wanted to, because they knew he was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So they got caught between their emotions, these conflicting emotions, and they just were stunned and couldn't move. So this type of consciousness that they have, where their love for Krishna is overwhelmed by their knowledge of his opulence, is different from the love that the residents of Vrindavan have, that they can even know his opulence and still not become overwhelmed. Their love is still more powerful. The flame of their love is still higher. So even Devaki and Vasudeva's love is so great, but how still much greater and the most sweetest and most wonderful is the love of the residents of Vrindavan. It is out of this world. It is out of every world. It is even out of the world of Mathura. It's the supreme, and supreme of that is the love of the Vraja Gopis. And it is so extraordinary, one could say, that it's the love of the Brijbasis for Krishna. They have, when he leaves Vrindavan, they have no life left, practically speaking. They cannot do anything. They cannot sleep. They cannot eat. Mother Yasoda doesn't eat. She doesn't talk. She's just continuously crying because she can't see her beloved Krishna in front of her. Where is this love? If she's the ocean of this Sudavatsalya Prem, and she. And when Uddhava comes, Nanda Maharaj somehow pulls himself out and talks to Uddhava. He begs, there's no food in the house because Mother Yasoda hasn't cooked ever since Krishna left. She can't cook. She's like the life has left her body. And he has to go to someone else's house to get something to feed Uddhava because it's impolite. So the whole time that Uddhava is there, there's a whole chapter 46 is so much of it is Nanda Maharaj, or the end of it is Nanda Maharaj conversing with Uddhava after Krishna and Balaram Nanda Maharaj speaking with Uddhava, but Mother Yasoda is not mentioned at all saying anything, because Nanda Maharaj somehow or another pulls himself out to be able to deal on a practical level, somewhat practical level with Uddhava. But Mother Yasoda can't. She's, as one verse says, she's willing to die 1,000 times, 1,000,000 times to save Krishna one drop of perspiration, of inconvenience. What is this? This is something from such a different realm from this theoretical mental platform material world. It is something completely different. It is something completely different where there is true love, not the reflection of love. That is so frustrating in this world. Both, we try to take real love, but we can only give fake love. Because we're all sort of fake in this world, but we're longing for real love. But we just basically end up living in our minds. This is the material creation. It's all just living in the minds, in the mind, where it's all concocting, putting together all the different ingredients of our hopes for pleasure, putting it together, and imagining that there's going to be some happiness. It's the world of the material world. Okay, let's stop it. Sorry. I read recently one argument for the existence of God that was so unique. Thought I'd mention it to you, that people use the creation and the existence of the world to make an argument for God. But to me that seems like the furthest thing that would make an argument for a good argument for God, because this creation is so terrible. So how could everyone dies, for a start. You start with that, and there's, and look at the things that happen. Look what animals do to animals. Look what people do to animals. Look what people do to people. Like what people do to themselves. So with a creation like this, how could you make an argument for a benevolent, all good God? And then he said, the greatest argument he finds for the existence of God is that people always believe in God despite the creation. So that proves that there's something in them that is really... And it's always been there, it's in all cultures. There's something inherent in man. So that something natural. Anyway, I thought it was... I don't know. Thank you.